the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thank you so much for tuning in today and for waking up your imagination with Art Zany. I appreciate everyone who listens, and it's wonderful. I hear people stop me on the street and say thank you, so I know what we're doing here is an awful lot of fun, and it's nice to hear that other people are enjoying our show as well. You know, I have to admit in the first part of this show that I feel a little bit nostalgic right now, partly because the past few years have been kind of like we've been pulled out of standard orbit and sent whirling into the unknown. It feels like a really intense year. A lot of stuff going on in our household and then the world. And I think exploring can be exciting, but I think I want to feel my feet back on the ground for a few weeks. And I'm looking forward to the holiday season. Maybe it's going to provide some of that. I want a little bit of those holiday traditions and especially the twinkle of the holidays that comes. So I do have to also admit that I'm not a huge holiday person. I don't go over the top. I like to keep it a little bit simple. I love maybe a few little extra lights, maybe a little bit of sparkle because that helps with those long winter days. And, you know, maybe this year I'll bring back the holiday letter and maybe cook up a few batches of lefse, but there's no guarantees if it doesn't work out. And I'm just no promises. But I leave myself open to what feels joyful at the time. And I think that's the key to making the holidays for me is to keep it simpler and sweeter. And one tradition that I have that we have not stopped in all the years is to watch the movie A Christmas Story on television while we make the final preparations for Christmas Day. It's on probably for 2 days straight at our house. I love this movie so much. It's just looped in throughout the day. So you go back and forth between whatever you're doing and you just catch a scene and watch it and you come and go with the story. And it's really awesome. But I also have to admit that I didn't know about this movie until after I graduated from college. And a friend said, "Have you ever seen A Christmas Story?" I was like, "What's that?" So I got hooked immediately. And the other thing I love to do is have some Christmas music on. So sometimes we have Christmas CDs in the car or Christmas CDs that we only bring out for that very short period of time because you don't want to overdo the Christmas music. It's sort of like the movie. You get the specialness of the movie. So just the right amount of music makes the season magical and just the right amount of A Christmas Story. So today I am so thrilled to be able to talk about both of those things on Art Zany Radio. We've got two segments to the show today. First, we're going to talk about the production of the play A Christmas Story with cast Ralphie, Mom, and Flick, and I'll introduce those characters in just a minute, and we're going to talk about that classic story, and then Bill Child from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra is going to join us to talk about the upcoming holiday chamber music during Winter Walk, which is next week, folks. I can't believe that. So Christmas Story is at the Arts Guild, and that opens on December 7th, which is right around the corner, too. So I bet this is one show that I suspect is going to sell out. So you're going to want to get your tickets. You can go to northfieldartsguild.org to get the tickets. It runs for 2 weekends and 2 weekends only. There's some extended times. We'll get into that in a little bit, but I want to bring my guests to join me for the conversation about A Christmas Story. Welcome all to Art Zany Radio. I'd love for each of you to introduce yourselves, maybe tell a little bit about yourself, where you go to school, where you work, depending on what you want to tell, and maybe a little bit about what came first for you, the movie or the play, because that might be something that for some of the younger generation is not a tradition. So would we like to start? Which end? Connor's going to start. Great. Thank you.
I'm Connor Percy, and I play Ralphie in A Christmas Carol. I go to Northfield Middle School. In after-school activities, I participate in soccer, lots of theater, and also some dancing and singing lessons at Pinnacle. I really like acting, and I was really honored when Justin, the director, told me I could be Ralphie, because that was like my, like, this is my first lead role ever in a play. I really think that Ralphie is like the most, like, he was just like the role I really wanted to play from the very start, and I was really glad.
And did you see the movie, or did the play come first?
The movie came first for me. I really love the movie. It's probably one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time.
Yeah, it is. And I think Ralphie, too, is one of the greatest characters. So, folks, this is a show. If you don't know the story, it's really a fun holiday tradition. So you should. We'll get more back to more about Ralphie. But welcome to Art Zany Radio, and thanks for being here.
Yeah.
And let's go next to you. You are our Flick in the character, but tell us about yourself.
Hi, my name is Cosmo, and I play the role of Flick in A Christmas Story, and so I'm homeschooled, actually, so it's pretty neat to, like, go to play practice, and I get to sleep in sometimes, while as other kids aren't as lucky. And for me, I actually think the play came first, because the first day we all sat down and we read the script, and when I was reading through the script, I was like, oh my gosh, I really like this script. And when I was done with it, I was like, okay, this is better than the movie.
Ah, so you've seen the movie since you first read the play?
Yes, several times.
Oh, fun. And Flick is a really, we'll talk about his character too, which is a kind of an iconic character as well. And Janet, I'd love to hear from you. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name's Janet Lewis-Muth. I work at Carleton College, actually, in the Office of Health Promotion. And I also have a family, so I'm raising three kids and doing the mom thing, and I get to be a mom on stage. So I'm really enjoying that. I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan of the movie.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Yeah. So, but one of the things that I love about any movie that sort of becomes a classic is that we like to tell our favorite moments of those movies over and over, that part of retelling, like over the dinner table or even standing in line at a checkout, you connect with the person that you've seen the same movie as, and you, oh, remember that scene? And I feel like the play gives us the opportunity to do that with an audience every night. So I'm excited for people who are real fans of the movie to be able to come and see our version of some of those iconic scenes. And I'm excited for people who maybe don't love the movie to come and see it, because it is a different version, and it's really fun. I love the play.
That's maybe what we should talk about. I don't know if Connor, you want to jump in and tell us about people who don't know the play or don't know the movie or don't know the play. What is the difference between the two?
I feel like the play, I didn't really relate to the characters in the movie, but once, like, I saw the play and how it was being acted out, I could relate a lot more.
Oh, so what changes? Do you get to know little different sides of the characters, perhaps?
Yeah, I feel like in the play, you, like, if you see the play, you're, like, seeing real people, like, acting out live, so you really feel like you can connect with them more.
And tell us about Ralphie. What do you, how do you describe him if somebody says, who is he?
Well, everybody kind of thinks of Ralphie as like this innocent little kid, but I kind of think he's like, I really think he's kind of selfish, to be honest. Because the whole time his friends and everybody are like, sorry, and like they're trying to like make him feel better, and his family too, that he's not going to get this like big Christmas gift. But he never really like accepts their help, and he's always just like moping about and all that stuff. So
that's true. That's yeah. So true. And it is, I mean, it's a story. One thing that surprised me was I went to the Internet Movie Database, IMDb, to see what year was that movie? When did it come out? It came out in 1983, but it's set in the 40s. And what's interesting to me about that is I never like think of it in those terms because it feels like it's so timeless that there's so many elements of the story that just are, you know, issues that we talk about today when it comes to kids at school or friendships or families. And so it has that timelessness. And so I think it is probably why it translates to stage so well. And I'd love to hear from you, Cosmo, about Flick and, you know, what you describe him, you know, how he might be like you, not like you. What do you think of Flick?
Well, I was so excited to get the role of Flick because when Justin offered it to me, I hardly had any acting experience, and Flick was actually my favorite character in the movie, so that was really cool to play the role of him. He's
a friend of Ralphie's.
Yeah, he and Schwartz are Ralphie's best friends, and they're kind of trying to help him get this very special Christmas gift, in a way. And but ways how I'm like Flick, how I'm like Flick is he seems more laid back and not as eager as Ralphie is to get this Christmas gift. And he just doesn't push as hard, while, like, Schwartz pushes hard when he gets him to put his tongue on the pole, which...
A very memorable scene from the movie.
Yeah, and I think that's how I'm not like Flick. I would never put my tongue on a pole, because now I know.
Yeah, we had an incident at our household. I will not say which kid, but there was an incident with a stair railing and snow on top of it that looked just tasty, and boom, there we go, same story. So, but we didn't have to call the fire department. But that's one of those great moments, and so you'll get to do that on stage.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see how that rolls out. And Janet, the mom in this movie, I think she's a kind of a, well, I guess I don't know what the play is, so tell me how she is in the play.
Yeah, you know, she is a housewife. And a 1940s housewife, so just kind of supporting the family. She's cooking most of the time. we have laughed about just how much time I spend standing in the kitchen on stage throughout most of the show. But it's been really fun to play the process. I feel like I've gotten to be mom backstage for kind of everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
And also, one thing that I saw on the cast list is your daughter Maggie is in the play as well.
Yes, and that's been really special. It's been really fun for the two of us to have this time together. So.
And you mentioned, too, that this isn't your first time acting with one of your kids.
It's not. This is my third show ever in my adult life, and I have three kids, and I have been able to be in a show with each one of them now. So it's been really fun.
That's fantastic. And I think that's, you know, part of what makes this community so incredible is that there's support for everybody to be in all kinds of different artistic endeavors. I'm wondering for you guys, what do you have a favorite scene? What should folks know about this production? What are some of the ways that this story unfolds that will convince somebody to come and see this show?
I really like the Santa scene because it's like, first you kind of think like, oh, it's Santa, yay. But then you start to see Santa's a little more evil than you think he is. And that, like, it turns from happy to kind of horrible in just like a few minutes. And I think that one just like, it made me laugh so hard the first time I saw it on TV. And yeah, it was... That's just my favorite scene.
So I wonder, this might not be a show for, like, super young kids, because that might be a little scary. Do you think? What is there an age recommendation?
That's a great question. I mean, I think if families feel comfortable with their kids having seen the movie, I don't think there's anything in the play that's not in the movie. But it is a little bit different to have it be live.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something that if you've got children who aren't used to the intensity of live theater, just be aware that that's... that it is intense.
Mm-hmm.
So and Santa is big and real.
Right.
And he's larger than life. He's great.
Exactly.
Our Santa's wonderful.
That'll be a great highlight, and it's a great opportunity to come.
Yeah.
How about for you, Cosmo? What's your favorite scene, or what would you want to tell people about the show that they should, a reason they should come?
Well, I think reasons they should come is to see if they've seen the movie before and they have a favorite scene from the movie. You get to see it replayed again in real life. Like, for instance, a leg lamp scene, the Santa scene, something like that. You get to see it replayed. And there's also some scenes added into the play that weren't in the movie. So those scenes might be kind of fun for some other people.
Mm. Oh, so there's some additional things. It's like getting another look at these characters.
Yeah.
What's something different that will be wonderful for people to experience for the first time or maybe see anew?
One scene that was added into the play was the scene in Ralphie's imagination. Like, there's a lot of dream sequences, and this one, his friends are lost in an Indiana swamp, and he has to come save them. So that scene was super fun to do.
I would definitely imagine. Yeah. Oh, I'm excited already, and it isn't even here yet. And I should remind listeners, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I'm Paula Granquist. We're here with Connor, Cosmo, and Janet. We're talking about A Christmas Story, and that is opening at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater December 7th. It runs two weekends. The first weekend, it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Friday and Saturday shows are in the evening at 7:30, and then the Sunday show is at 2 o'clock? I forgot to write that down. So in the afternoon, but you can find all those details at northfieldartsguild.org. And the second weekend, it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So those are your opportunities to see it. I expect that it will sell out quickly, so now might be the time to grab your tickets. They also have a opening night reception as well as a first Sunday post-show discussion. If that's something that interests you, you might want to check that out. Janet, for you, what do you think is exciting, and what do you want to tell listeners about this show that they should come and see?
Well, I think what Cosmo was talking about with the fantasy or dream sequences, they are so much fun. They're really fun to do, and last night we were just starting to put the tech, you know, it's tech week, we're putting the tech final touches on, and I feel like whenever I've done a show, it's sort of riding a wave, right? Mm. The first couple of weeks, it's so exciting, the script is new, it's promising, you're excited, it's fun to get to know the other cast members, and then you usually hit a point where you think, I'm not sure we're gonna be ready.
I've heard that from every show that's ever been produced, right?
We always hit it, and I think last week we were all there, and then I think last night, when we finally had lights and sound effects, and so a dream sequence, which had just been us acting a little sillier than normal, last night it felt like a dream sequence. And I think all of us were like, oh, it's going to happen. We're actually going to get there. It's going to be fun. I think it might be good.
And I think that, what I'm feeling from all of you comes through when the stage production happens, is that excitement and that joy with the play comes across to the audience. And that makes it even more exciting, you know, as a fan to want to come and see it.
Yeah. The interaction with the audience is such an important part of live theater that I think any actor would say this, that when you're on stage and you hear an audience react, whether it's a gasp or a laugh or a whatever, it just spurs you on. Mm-hmm. And so we've had a couple of audience members, you know, we had our tech crew last night. It was one of the first times they'd seen a few of the scenes. And just hearing them laugh at the right moment was like a gift. So it's fun.
I would imagine. Yeah. And I'd love to hear, because the staging of this must be really fascinating too, because there's a lot of, you know, they can do in a movie that's big, that's harder to do on a stage. And then you have the Arts Guild stage, which is a smaller, we'll say, stage. So how has that been for you as a cast?
Yeah, right now it's good. But at the beginning, we were having a lot of trouble. Like, there would just be this one scene that would not work because we did not have the kitchen in the right place or something. I'm actually pretty sure we moved the kitchen about 5 times since we started. But yeah, it's just been kind of hectic until we finally got the set, like, done, and it just felt really good when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the kitchen scene, we talked ahead of time about one of my favorite scenes. As you mentioned, that everybody has their favorite is the mashed potatoes. But for folks that are fans, there's a change that we should alert everyone to.
It's breakfast, not dinner, so there's some oatmeal involved. You don't want to spoil it too much, but the scene happens. It's just not mashed potatoes.
So, but it's still going to be as good, just, you know, little slight shift.
Yep.
Which is good, you know. It makes it anew and it makes it something that's fresh. And but I'm certain this is as amazing and relatable and classic. And what do you think keeps the storyline going? I mean, this is a movie that's been, I don't know how many years is that since the original came out, over 30 years of, you know, being replayed and repeated and loved. So what do you think makes it a classic?
I think it's a classic because it's, like, so relatable, but with, like, because it's, like, realistic with just, like, the perfect amount of humor that you can relate to it. Like, I know I just said that Ralphie's, like, kind of selfish, but I can relate to Ralphie a lot because, well, like, this Christmas, I really, like, want a phone. But my parents keep saying that, like, everybody's telling me, like, oh, no, it's bad for your brain and stuff like that. And, like, you'll burn your brains out is almost the same thing as you'll shoot your eye out.
I love the comparison. And my kids have tried. Everybody else has one. And I'm like, no, actually, I'm pretty sure. You're in good company. You're not the only one. But that's a really good, that would be a fun update to it. Yeah, and I was thinking, too, about just the idea of, you know, kids having a tough time with friendships and schools, and then their parents behaving very weirdly, which I'm sure all kids can relate to. And then we become parents, and we're like, oh, I am that. Someone want to tell me about the lamp? Because we mentioned it, and other people who maybe aren't familiar with the story might wonder, what are they talking about? You want to jump in, Cosmo?
Yeah, sure. So the leg lamp is basically, if you don't know what it is, it's a lamp shaped like a woman's leg. And we don't have a prop for it yet, but it's coming soon.
Ooh, that'll be an exciting day to be able to open that box. And I think that's what happens in the movie is, you know, he won this prize through some sort of contest, and he wants to love it.
He does love it. Oh, he does love it. One of my favorite parts of the mother's role is that she really doesn't love it.
Not at all.
And that is that the interplay that I get to have with the old man is really fun. We have a good time.
Yeah, and I should mention, I mean, the cast is just phenomenal. Kevin Chapman is playing Ralph, the dad, and I can imagine he's extraordinary in this.
Yeah.
And you have an incredible cast. You should go to northfieldartsguild.org, take a look. And what I love is that there's probably somebody that you know, right? And so it's always more fun to see someone playing a role that you can recognize and cheer for them and support them. And that's one of the great things about being in Northfield is that you get to have that opportunity. And I wonder, how do you want audiences, or how do you imagine audiences will feel after they see this production? And what are you hoping for people who come to the show? What are you doing as a cast to sort of figure out what the audience, what you're hoping for?
I think the audience will have mixed emotions when they come see the play, because there's some happy moments, there's some moments you might, like, laugh so hard you start crying, and there's some moments where you almost might feel sad.
Mm.
It's really kind of like a mixed emotion kind of play, and that's another one of the reasons that everybody likes it, I feel like.
Yeah, and when you have those ups and those downs, but you mix it up with laughter, I think that's what makes a great book, a great movie, a great play, you know, everything comes together. So that's what life is, right? That's life is like that. What else have we missed? What do we need our folks to know about A Christmas Story? I got to get the right article. That's a part of speech, yes? Okay, we were talking about adverbs at our house, so I've been working on learning all that. So this opens again December 7th, and you guys are just in those final productions. Tell me about maybe learning a little about the comedy and trying some of those pieces there's physical comedy, I would imagine, in this, mm-hmm. and delivering jokes, and Cosmo is prepared to tell us, because your character is that's kind of essential, isn't it?
Yes, because, well, first of all, the tongue sticking scene, there's a lot of really fun physical work you have to do to make the audience laugh with that. And there's another scene where the teacher, Miss Shields, finds out that I have my tongue on this lamppost, and she brings me back in the classroom, and she does this big monologue, and she's just shaking me super hard. It's really funny.
So you have to embody that and then, you know, play with that. That's one of the great things about being in a play, is you get to do things you might not regularly do in life.
I think it's a really fun combination of, as Connor was saying, there's a lot of realism. The characters are pretty real. You can relate to them. And then there's parts that are just so over the top. They're so far over the top that it just is... It's fun, and I think part of it is it allows us to laugh at ourselves, because it takes it to that point where you know you've played that sequence out in your head, right? You've imagined yourself stranded in a swamp in Indiana, right?
Like, what are you going to do?
Right? What do you do with that? Or you've imagined that you're, you know, all of the different things that come up. I don't want to spoil it. But I do think that there's something really fun about being able to have characters that are relatable and then take it completely over the top. And this is a cast that I think is not afraid to take it over the top, which is also really fun.
And it's directed by Justin Cervantes, which I imagine that he's been a part of building that rapport.
Absolutely. Yeah, he has given us a lot of space to do what we think feels right. And he has said repeatedly, take it as far as you want, and if it's too far, I'll dial you back. And I think in the whole course, there's only been one time that he's dialed anybody back. So it's been he's letting us go, which is fun.
And I expect that will come across, and that's why I'm looking forward to this. It has been my thrill. Any last words? Were you going to jump on and say something?
Sure.
Okay.
The one other, like, scene that, like, how Cosmo was talking earlier about, like, what scenes, like, the physical comedy, definitely, like, as I was saying earlier, like, the Santa scene is a super funny scene, but when I read it in the script, I didn't even laugh at all, but then the second it was acted out, I could not stop laughing.
I would imagine it's that Santa that you were talking about who encapsulates all of those, the delivery of those lines.
Santa and each of the kids, it's, yeah.
Oh, who is our Santa? Dean Lamp is the Santa. I don't think I've met Dean, so that'll be exciting.
He's hilarious.
Well, thank you for coming to Art Zany Radio and for sharing the story of A Christmas Story, something everyone should add to their holiday plans. And it's hard to believe that it's already the holiday season, but it is. And so now it's time to gear up for all the plans you want to make. Thank you for being here, Connor, Cosmo, and Janet, and your characters as well. I can't wait to see you on stage.
Thanks for having us, Paula.
You're very welcome. Folks, northfieldartsguild.org is where you can get all the details. I'm going to pop on some music, and we're going to switch over to our second segment, which is going to be about the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra Holiday Chamber Music. And this is a piece called Frosty the Snowman. You'll certainly recognize it. And it is from the String Quartet channel, and this is the Wedding Quartet, I believe, is the name of that. So we'll be right back in a moment on Art Zany Radio.
Thank you.
And that was, as you heard, the wonderful, easy to recognize Frosty the Snowman, which is kind of exciting. I sure appreciate I think that version where the strings are is really a beautiful, beautiful version. And that was from the Wedding String Quartet out of the UK, which I thank Paul for sending that to me. It's nice to have his, sorting through of all the things that you can possibly pull up on YouTube. It's kind of amazing of the variety of things, and he always brings a good one forward. So lovely music. We're going to talk now about the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra Holiday Chamber Music. This is, I think it's a brand new event that they're doing. I don't know that they've done it before, but this is a part of Winter Walk, which happens Thursday, December 6th in downtown Northfield. And this is, if you don't know Winter Walk, you're in for a treat. It's quite the amazing happening in downtown Northfield. And come early and bundle up to walk, because the parking can always be a challenge to get downtown. But everything gets closed off. They have lights around town. Stores are open. And one of the things that you'll be able to do is listen to the chamber music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. That's at the Eagles Club Hall, which is on Water Street. So that's 304 Water Street South. And there'll be refreshments there. A free will offering is going to be accepted. There's a brass quintet, a woodwind quintet, string quartets, and lots of others from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra. And Paul says there might even be some roving musicians, like carolers, but with instruments. I suppose some of that depends on the weather and the cold, because it would be really hard to play some of those instruments in the really, really bitter cold. But we will see what the weather's going to be like. Here to talk with us about the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra and share his story is Bill Child. Welcome to Artsany Radio.
Good morning. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. You probably don't know that I'm a fan of yours, because I've gone to lots of Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra concerts, and you're very often there.
Yeah, I've been there a long time.
You have. Tell us about your connection to the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra.
The orchestra started in, I think, 1979, and I was playing bassoon at that point, but I evidently didn't know about the very beginning of it, because I didn't get involved until about a year later, so I was close to the beginning.
That's a long time ago.
And so I've been playing with them nearly every year since, except for a few sabbatical leaves, you know, when you're away for a year, and maybe a few other trips when I wasn't able to be there for the concert date. So, you know, other people would fill in, and, of course, the personnel over the years have rotated around a lot. And then finally last June, I declared that I was reaching sort of the end of my good performance years, maybe you would say, and decided to retire. But I haven't given up the instrument yet, so that's why the other folks in the quintet that I'm going to be in for next Thursday night, that's why we're still together, because I'm hoping that I won't let it drop to nothing.
Well, that's a lot of years of playing the bassoon, so I suspect it'll continue for a long time. And I was there for that night when they, wished you a farewell and congratulated you on how many hundreds of concerts it seems like you must have been in.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I had a strange practice of saving all the programs of any program I've ever been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes way back. So I've got several containers of programs that occupy maybe a foot of shelf space next to my desk. And what I'll do with them, I don't know. I've gone back and read through a few, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, it gets to be a habit forming practice, I guess.
And that's pretty great, because other folks may know you. You're a professor emeritus from Carleton College
right.
in the Chemistry
department.
That's right. That's probably why we didn't connect. That was too much for me. But people may know, but you've done a lot with the community, you know, music making here and in the Twin Cities, and I think that's a pretty incredible thing to. You always made sure that was a part of your life. So tell us a little bit about your experiences with making music across the area.
Well, let's see, the other major organization that I've been involved with over quite a few years, and I haven't played with them for half a dozen years, that's the St. Paul Civic Symphony, which is, you know, despite its official sounding name, it's not a professional orchestra. It's an amateur orchestra like many others in the Twin Cities. And so I started with them after I retired and started taking bassoon lessons again to try to, you know, get a little bit better than the sort of mixed level that I was playing at before. So shortly after I started taking lessons again, I joined them in about 1991, I think, or 92. And that's a great organization. It has people who, you know, the pool of people that can be drawn from is huge. And so you get some really fine players there and enough players to fill all the positions. So you'd have string sections that are, oh, almost as large as in the Minnesota Orchestra, for example, which is what you need to have a good orchestra sound rather than sort of band-like quality. So that was a great experience, and there were, I worked with a couple of very nice conductors, Ed Forner, who was in the faculty of the music department at McAllister College, and he was with the orchestra. He was with it from the very early days, and then later on, Jeff Sterling took over, and he's a very fine musician, you know, professional quality musician who is an excellent conductor, knows exactly what he wants from the orchestra, and tries to bring out all the subtleties that a lot of times in amateur orchestra you don't bother with. So that was a great experience, but there again I decided that maybe I should kind of move on. Also, that means commuting up to the Twin Cities weekly, and then a little more often when a concert comes around. So that was getting to be a bit much, too.
I would imagine that's a commitment, and quite a commitment.
Yeah, right. And, you know, that was a fairly serious enterprise. So if you have to miss a rehearsal, which is not encouraged, you're expected to find somebody else to replace you for the rehearsal, because if you don't, especially if you're in a section where you're the only one playing the part, then it really is a detriment to the rehearsal if you don't show up. All of a sudden, something's missing.
Yeah, let's talk about the bassoon. When did you first pick up the bassoon? And you're right when you mentioned that oftentimes there's just one bassoonist in the orchestra or the chamber group.
Right. Yeah. So, actually, I'm a converted clarinet player, because that's where I started.
Yay,
way back
I love
in
the
fifth
clarinet.
Grade. Yeah. So, I played clarinet and I got pretty good at it. I played in high school band and made the state, all-state band in New Jersey. This was way back when I lived in New Jersey, where I grew up. So, I stayed with the clarinet through first part of college, because I played in the band there, and then, you know, it got shoved aside, got involved more, I guess, with other things and keeping up with coursework. So I would only pick it up pretty rarely for the last couple of years of college, and then I went to grad school and rarely touched it. And each time I played it, it was so awful. I could barely stand it, you know, when you don't practice for months and months and pick it up, the sound is off.
Yeah, your embouchure, it takes a long time to build that
right.
back up.
So you feel as though you don't know quite what you're doing. And it was very discouraging. So I had a little motivation to go on with the clarinet. Then I arrived at Carleton to start teaching chemistry and got to know Eugene Bailey, who was the orchestra conductor way back then in 1956. And so I talk with him now and again, and he learned that I was a clarinet player and I'd also played saxophone. And so one day he said, "How would you like to learn bassoon?" And the reason he did was because he had no bassoon students at all. He had no bassoonist from the college who would play in the orchestra. So he said, I'll pay for lessons. All you have to do is go, you know, take the lessons, and then we can, when you, you know, get a little bit of a grasp of the instrument, you can start playing." So that's what I did, and I'm sure it wasn't very good at the beginning, but I continued to take lessons for a while, maybe four years or so. So I got a decent facility with the instrument, and then that's how I got started. Then, playing with various groups. When we went on sabbatical leave, for example, there was often a local orchestra that I would play with for just the 1 year. And so then we went on. I don't know how much of the story you want.
No, but I think it's fascinating, and because I grew up playing the clarinet too, so I can relate to a lot of that, although I never attempted the bassoon. And so I would imagine that the sound is clearly different.
Yeah, right. The idea of fingering, though, carries over.
Mm-hmm.
Fingering on the bassoon is more complicated. Some your thumbs have to deal with quite a few more keys.
Okay.
At different times than on the clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
But the reed, the reed is always a challenge.
Right.
Double reed is even more of a challenge, I think, maybe than single reed. I'm not sure, but
I think so.
Adjusting reeds is always one of the parts of playing. And if you can't adjust the reed right to make it sound properly, there's no point and going on, really.
That's right. Tuning your instrument is really essential before you play.
And making it respond properly,
mm-hmm.
And the reed is what controls that.
So. Exactly. And I think it's a fascinating story, and it shows that you can, learn something new at any time, at any age, right? It transfers your skill set.
Yeah, I think so. Sure. And it was a new challenge for me, and I didn't have to deal with a history of having played it before and then realizing that I wasn't so good anymore. So this was a brand new start. So
Now you've played bassoon for, does that feel like your
main
instrument?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
Well, and we're talking about the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra, their holiday chamber music event, which will be happening during Winter Walk. That's at the Eagles Club Hall, which is down on Water Street. So folks can take a turn off of Division and head down to Water Street. I'm sure there'll be some signs or some lights that head you that way. It's always, I think, a lovely evening when you get to walk down. My kids always find it amazing that they get to walk down the middle of the street, and there's reindeer and sleighs and Santa and candles and cocoa, and it's just a lovely time. And it's what Northfield does to introduce us and set off the holidays. Tell us, you said you're in one of the chamber music that's going to be performing. So
that's right.
Tell us a little bit about the group, and I would imagine you're not going to be strolling with the bassoon. That would be really hard.
No, we have to be pretty much settled, yeah.
A few instruments that lend themselves to that, but not the bassoon.
That's right. Oh, there is a neck strap you can use.
I suppose.
Marching with it would be a real challenge.
And then in the cold, too. That's what I'm wondering, how those instruments are going to do, but...
No, I think as far as I know, all of this is indoors.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe that's we should give a shout out to Paul Numistow, who's often with me on Art Zany talking about Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra events, that they'll be set up at different locations roaming as opposed to just actually walking up and down the street.
Oh, that might be. Yeah.
And tell us about your group, and do you know the music you'll be playing?
Yeah, well, I didn't bring my music along, so I'm afraid I can't give you titles, but the group is are people who all play in the orchestra. That's how we got together. And quite some time ago, Paul was canvassing the orchestra for groups that might play. I think, if I remember correctly, it was in it was at Central Park in the summer. There was a musical event going on, and he had been asked to provide small groups to play for that. And that's how our quintet got started.
Mm.
And so it's a standard woodwind quintet. That means flute, clarinet, oboe, bassoon, and horn.
All woodwinds.
The horn is actually a brass instrument.
Oh, okay.
But for some reason, historically, it's been put together with these four woodwinds.
The French horn, right?
Strictly, it's supposed to be called the horn.
It is. Yeah. Okay. That's something
I didn't... French horn is a common way of describing it, yeah.
Okay.
But anyhow, so that's the standard group, and there's quite a literature written for it. Unfortunately, some of the major composers didn't write for woodwind quintet at all. So often when you look at a program for woodwind quintet, you'll recognize only a few of the composers because of this fact. So anyhow, Judy Tonelli playing French horn. And by the way, of course, we've rotated around through different people. Some of us have been together for quite a long time. And then Kathy Zito playing clarinet, Heather Scott, oboe, and Donna, I'm blocking her last name now, is playing flute. And she's our newest member right now. So, even though you might be providing only 15 minutes of music, it takes quite a bit of rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And one part of the rehearsal is deciding when you're sort of surveying music, you've got quite a few pieces you might choose from to play. One of the things is, can we play it, you know?
Right, do we have the skills?
Yeah, right. Is it at our level? So that's an important decision. You play through some stuff and you think, well, we kind of like it, but, you know, not sure we could work that up to get it to the right tempo so that it would sound
right
good.
In the amount of rehearsal time you might have. And
exactly,
And I think that's what's lovely about chamber music, I think, is that it's often... you know, the small group, it's reflective of the group, and because they have to be able to work together, and you don't have an orchestra leader, you don't have a conductor.
That's right.
It's all of you working together to stay in time, to stay together, to support, lift up, and
right.
help each other through each piece.
Sure, right, and to agree on what you're going to do when there's a retard and everybody has to slow down together, and other things, you know. You know, who's supposed to be really prominent here, and then the other people have to kind of lay back
mm-hmm.
and not play out so much, and you have to decide all those things, because otherwise, you know, the music is going to be kind of a mishmash. It won't seem to have a vitality that you get when you really understand it and try to bring out those parts that are important.
Mm-hmm. I do have a piece. This is which is a woodwind quintet
mm-hmm.
That maybe we could play just to give people a little sample. This isn't a piece that you're necessarily playing. It isn't reminiscent of you, but it's one that Paul pulled up for us. This is from A Christmas Card 2017. Angels We Have Heard on High. It's from the Philharmonia Orchestra out of London, and this is the wind quintet. So let's take a listen here. I'm going to stretch my arms and bring up the... here we go. We'll see if this gives us a little bit of an example so we can get our ears ready for it.
Thank you.
I kind of love that ending. I think that was a beautiful, and that was an example of a woodwind quintet, just similar makeup to what you'll be performing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and we're going to do one piece in our quintet for next Thursday. We're going to do one piece that is definitely Christmas music, kind of a mixture of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the others we feel are appropriate, you know, even though they're not actually Christmas carols.
But. Yeah, for the chamber music, just to have that performance. And I think it's really fascinating. We were talking while some of that was playing about some of the resources available on YouTube and the way that technology has kind of entered into the chamber music world,
yes.
Which is exciting. It gives you an opportunity to hear things.
Yes, right. And as I was saying, oftentimes there are complicated combinations of sounds coming from the different instruments playing with different rhythmic patterns, and when you're reading it for the first time, playing it for the first time, you really don't know how it's all supposed to fit together, and so you fall apart, the whole thing falls apart, and then you've got to stop and figure out, when do you play on this, does the flute player play on the first beat, so I know when that's coming, and so I come in on the last half of the second beat or something, and so I can place it correctly with respect to the flute and with respect to the other instruments. And a lot of that is painstaking work, and anybody, any musician knows this. But if you have the YouTube or just an ordinary CD recording as a guide, it can help you figure out just how all the parts fit together.
Right. Well, I'm excited to hear what you have planned. This is one of the groups that's going to be playing for the holiday chamber music. You're part of the Woodwind Quintet. Do you have a title, a name of your group?
Yeah, we just call it the Northfield Woodwind Quintet. Yeah.
Okay.
Very prosaic.
Yes. But it says who you are. And it's going to be delightful. And it's a nice break maybe from come inside to the Eagles Club, warm up a little bit because it's indoors, listen to some music. Like I said, there'll be refreshments. And that's down on Water Street, 304 Water Street South. They're accepting a free will offering, which supports the activities, I imagine, of the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra, all of the mm-hmm. performance halls, the programs they print, the
music rental.
Mm-hmm. Getting the music rental. They have to have music stands and all kinds of things that support the orchestra. So I think it's a lovely way to celebrate the holidays. There'll be a brass quintet, a string quartet, and other small groups, which is really all chamber music is mm-hmm. a collection of musicians together performing in a small group. And it's a lovely, intimate sound. I think that's what I enjoy most about it.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to play, too, because it depends more on your own skill and initiative, whereas in an orchestra, you tend to be buried a little bit more in the big sea of sound, you know.
So, that's especially true for some of the woodwinds, right?
Yes.
They don't get some of the fancy stuff all the time. But it's a great way to experience music. So I hope you'll join them. That's Thursday, December 6th. The music, I think Paul said to come at 5:30. Music starts shortly thereafter, and it goes until 8, so that you'll be able to enjoy that event. I thank you, Bill, for coming here and joining me today.
Pleasure to be here.
It was a delight to learn a little more about your story, and thanks for your commitment to music and making music in this community in the Twin Cities.
You're very welcome.
It's that we need people like that, because we need musicians, we need audiences, and when they come together, it's a wonderful thing. So I hope you have that opportunity during this holiday season to be able to do that. This is Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination. I thank you so much for being a part of the show, and I hope that in this next week you add some Art Zaney to your life, and always remember to enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zaney is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.